This is Alternate Reality episode 385, where we're reviewing a bunch of crap. I don't care.
And all the girlies say I'm pretty fly for a white guy.
Alternate Reality is a podcast about comics, comic-related media, and comic-related merchandise. We do reviews of all sorts, TV, video games, movies, and comic issues. So be warned, the following show material contains spoilers. If you have not read your books, seen the movies, played the games, so forth and so on, then you may want to stop the show until you have done so, or you can proceed at your own caution. You have been warned.
Hello and welcome to Alternate Reality, the comic book podcast. My name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we're back for our second installment of our new iteration of the show. It's a pleasure to be with you guys this week as we talk about all the things going on in the world of comics, TV, videos, movies, or whatever might strike our fancy. Charlie, you good?
Yeah, I'm good.
Have a good week?
I guess.
Enjoy yourself? Charlie's like, that's life. Can't expect too much out of it. But we do our best. So, we talked about Avengers Infinity War last time. We hoped you enjoyed that episode. It was 2 hours long. Oh, my God. So, sorry about that. But, you know.
It didn't feel like it until about 30 minutes in.
So, we apologize about that.
Oh, my God.
Are we still talking?
Jeez.
We talked a long time, but we appreciate your patience with us. We hope you enjoyed that, even if you had to listen to it in segments and chunks or whatever. Hopefully, as we get back into the stream of things here, we'll get better at what we do and things will go smoother. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You can tell there's still a lot of rust on the cogs. And hopefully, we'll get back into doing hopefully a regular show. We've still got a lot of kinks to work out here. So give us a little leeway. We used to be really professional at everything we did. Not so much now. It's kind of almost like we're amateurs again, trying to learn brand new. So we appreciate your willingness to bear with us as we clean up our construction mess around here and get back into the game. So we're going to talk about comics this week, and Charlie got the opportunity to see a couple movies, but he's not really going to talk about that stuff. Deadpool came out this past week. I've elected not to see it. I didn't see the first one while it was in the theater, and I just waited around for video on that one. I'm going to do the same with this one, so we're going to kind of skip that. We're not going to talk about it on the show. He also got to see Ready Player One. He was telling me how great that was, and he enjoyed it. So I'll probably wait for video on that one, too. So we're not going to talk about those. But Solo comes out in a week. And while I'm not really looking all that forward to it, I do intend to see it. And so we may get an opportunity to talk about that one. But it's all about comics, and Charlie got a review here for you that he wants to talk to you about. A comic book that I didn't read called Barrier. Charlie, tell us about this.
This is a Barrier book. It's written by Brian K. Vaughan, and I guess Marcos Martin is doing the artwork with Munsa Vicente. I guess he's doing the color work. And this is a weird book, and it's one of his panel syndicate books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he does, like, pay whatever you want books on this website called Panel Syndicate.
Okay.
And he's doing, like, some, like, he did Private Eye a couple years ago. He's done this one recently. And the first issue came out for Free Comic Book Day. And it's a weekly thing. But like I said, if you go on to panelsyndicate.com, it's panelsyndicate.com.
Right.
Not Comics Panel Syndicate. That'd be too long, I guess. You can read the whole thing right now. And if you want to give him money, you can. If you don't want to, you can read it all for free.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's this thing where he's got other creators on it, too. And this book is printed like John, compare this to your regular size comic book.
Oh, hang on. I see. Yeah. All right, so I'm comparatively looking at this issue of Star Trek, The Next Generation Through the Mirror by our good friend J.K. Woodward. And the dimensions are a little off. The book is about an inch or so taller than a normal comic book, and maybe just half an inch shorter horizontally.
Well, do you know why that is?
No, I do not know why that
is. It's because it's printed all sideways.
Oh, it's landscape.
Yeah, it's landscape.
And designed to fit a computer screen, I take it. Yeah. Okay, all right.
And this is an interesting book. It's about these two people, one named Lydia and one named Oscar, mm-hmm. who get abducted in this Texas town by aliens.
Right.
And it's kind of told from each other's point of view. Lydia is like a rancher who owns her own piece of land in Texas, and her animals are getting killed. She's a widower.
Mm-hmm.
How widow is she? No, she's a widower, and she's set to, like, she thinks that the mutilations on her farm are because a gang's coming through trying to take over her land.
Right.
As they escape the border from Mexico. And she's trying to figure out what's going on. Well, on the other side, you have Oscar, who is in Mexico. And when they switch to Oscar's point of view, everything's written in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no translation at all.
Right.
So I know a little bit of Spanish, so I got to piece it together. But the art really kind of like tells you what's going on. But the thing is, they get abducted at the end of the first book. So they're dealing with what's going on. And the rest of the issues I've read, it's a 5-part miniseries in comic books. But like I said, you can go read it right now, finish it.
So on
panosyndicate.com.
Is it done, or are they going to do more?
Well, it's done. That's why it's being printed now.
Okay. So, but they, you don't know if they intend to come out with more chapters?
No. I'm pretty sure it's just...
just one and done kind of thing? Okay.
It's interesting. Like I said, the art's pretty good.
Well, it's Brian K. Vaughan.
It's all sideways. But yeah...
So I've hardly read anything by Brian K. Vaughan that I didn't think was very, very good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a hugely talented writer.
Well, this is okay. It's not the best Brian K. Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's... what was that one where... about the bears and the lions? Because I didn't like that one that much.
Oh. Pride of Baghdad?
Yeah, Pride of Baghdad.
Oh, I thought that was really good. Yeah. I mean, it was... I mean,
I didn't care for it as much. Yeah. But like, I read Saga, and Saga's amazing.
Well, see, I got started on Saga before I took a hiatus from comic books, so now I'm 40 issues or something behind. So
Saga is so good. Saga is one of those books where you're just like, I really like this character. I should never have liked that character ever because they're dead now.
Oh, so he's taking a page from George R. R. Martin's book. Huh?
Yeah, he kills people freely and without remorse. But, yeah, it's the third issue. They're on the spaceship. They're having communication problems. Mm-hmm. It's funny because, like, when he gets zapped aboard the ship, he lands and he's fine. But, like, when she lands, she gets, like, zapped through this blue field and it, like, dissolves all of her clothes. So when they first meet each other on the spaceship, because
right.
when they first met each other, they were on Earth
mm-hmm.
and they were automatically sucked up into the spaceship. Well, now this is the second time meeting each other, and she's stark A naked.
We got to quit meeting like
and
this.
And they got to figure out how to escape the ship and how to communicate to do so. So, because she doesn't speak Spanish, and he doesn't understand English.
Excellent. So, you overall enjoyed that?
Yeah.
Okay, good beans.
Like I said, it's okay. It's not the greatest thing.
So you know what wrapped up recently?
What?
Dark Knight's Metal. Now, we're not actually reviewing Dark Knight's Metal.
We don't even go into it.
We're here talking about No Justice.
Don't go into it.
But No Justice springs from... I have to touch on it just for a second. Just for a second. But No Justice springs from Dark Knight's Metal.
That event, yeah.
Yeah, and so Dark Knight's Metal was
written
by Scott Snyder.
There was something that happened in the last issue of Metal that...
precipitates what goes on here, right. But if I could just offer a really brief opinion of Dark Knight's Metal, when that book started out, I was completely into it. I was like, oh, man, this is great. When that book got done, I was like, what happened? I would need to go back and reread that to try and figure it out. It got really messy really quick on a Grant Morrison-style level of crazy. It hooked me at the beginning, and I was along for the ride, and then I got, you know... I don't know. It just didn't work out for me at the end. I wasn't crazy about it. And at the end of the day, I think it was an excuse for Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo to do a metal themed DC book. Because I think the metal part of it and the fact that Capullo is a metalhead had more to do with it than just the actual storyline. And I think they made the rest of it up to go along. And that's just my opinion. But the thing that happens at the end of that story...
Yes.
Is that in
defeating
Barbatos or Barbados? How do you pronounce that? I don't know. And defeating him and destroying the Dark Multiverse or putting it back where it goes or whatever they did to it, and somehow or another, and I'm still not 100% sure how or why, they broke the source wall. Now, for those of you that are longtime DC readers, you know that at the edge of the known universe, there is a giant wall that is infinitely tall, infinitely wide, and running in every and all directions forever and ever, a wall that looks like it's carved in stone out of and carved into that stone is the bodies of giants and warriors and aliens and strange races and new gods and people from Apocalypse and the like, right? And over time, different people who try to breach the source wall, so the story goes, get added to the source wall and become part of it. So the source wall, they say that on the other side of it is the source. We don't really know what that is. Or the thing that maybe gave birth to the universe. We don't really know what that is. Because this is kind of the hokey DC origin of the universe thing that they've always hinted at, you know, with the big cosmic hand thing that we don't really know what is. But apparently, whatever that thing is, it's on the other side of the source wall. All right, so now they've broke the source wall. Dun, dun, dun. There's a big gaping hole in it. And something's bound to come through, right? And then, so here's the premise of this. So this book opens up with the Green Lantern Corps all gathered at the source wall trying to figure out how to fix this. You know, they don't really know what they're going to do about it or what they can do about it. They're all using their power and their power lanterns and batteries and whatever to try and hold back this entropy and this energy that is trying to seep through the wall, and they're not doing a very good job of it, and they really don't know what to do about it. Fade from that to the planet Earth. And the planet Earth is being besieged by none other than Brainiac. And then, of course, we've seen this kind of fight before. Brainiac comes to Earth, and he overthrows, you know, people. He's going to generally take a city, whether it be Metropolis or whatever, and bottle it up like Kandor, and then he'll destroy the rest of the planet because he doesn't want anything but whatever he saves in the bottle to survive. That's Brainiac's thing. He's tried it like 100 times. As usual, the DC heroes have gathered together to fight him, but not, you know, not just the Justice League. There are other teams involved, too. There's the Suicide Squad, the Titans, the Teen Titans, and several other groups that have all gathered together to rally in different locations, because instead of attacking in one place, which is what Brainiac tends to do in these kinds of things, he's attacking in multiple places. And I think it's really cool that in all the different places that he's attacking, he looks different. Did you notice that? Because in one place, he looks kind of like the traditional green-bodied Kaluan. That's the one the Justice League's fighting. But in other places, he looks kind of like the animated universe from the Superman animated series, Brainiac.
They said they didn't look the same. I think they actually pointed that out at one point, yeah.
And in another place, it looked like the Brainiac robots that looked like skeletons with brains at the top of them. And so it's just weird that how Brainiac has got these armies that fight at his command that look like the different iterations of Brainiac throughout DC Comics history. I just think that's kind of cool. So that caught my attention. But anyway, so as the Justice League is trying to fight Brainiac, you know, Brainiac's like, you can't defeat me. Y'all are pitiful. In fact, you're proving my point about why you're really bad at this, because the teams that you guys have yourself on don't rally together around any common strengths. You've formed bonds around things like friendship and camaraderie, and those are weaknesses. What you should be matching your teams around are things like similar power sets and things you have in common physically as opposed to emotionally. And so he ends up, basically, long story short, capturing all these heroes. And so they wake up on the Brainiac ship. And an odd group of people are waking up on the Brainiac ship. So here's one scene where Beast Boy, Starfire, Zatanna, and Harley Quinn all wake up together. And so now they're trying to figure out how they're going to get out of this locked room they're in. They're having trouble. They're trying to breach the door, and they can't. In other parts of the ship, other teams have woken up. Here's one where Martian Manhunter, the Atom, who, I don't know when they made this decision, has an Atom costume that looks very much like the TV show Atom costume, as opposed to the Atom costume that I've always been familiar with, which was basically just a bodysuit with his size-changing belt, right? So I don't like this new Iron Man-esque Atom costume that they've got going on right now.
I couldn't even tell that was Atom. I was like, where did Iron Man pop up?
Yeah, really. You know?
Mean, seriously, because it's like in one scene it's red and gold.
So, and on that same team, I think the Huntress is there, maybe. No, it's Raven. Excuse me. Raven, Dr. Fate, and Damian are all there in the same scene together. And then they bump into, as they're walking down the corridor, they bump into Brainiac, who is with the proper league, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg, and Flash. And so they're trying to say, what is going on? Long story short, hey, why have you kidnapped us? And Brainiac tells them this long, convoluted story about, well, since you idiots managed to breach the source wall, like you totally couldn't defeat Barbados or Barbatos or whatever his name is, Barbasol or whatever. Couldn't defeat him without breaching the source wall. Now we've got a mess to clean up. Because these four beings, which represent the four entities of that created the Real of Reality, were called the Omega Titans. They represent entropy, wisdom, wonder, and mystery, which are four odd forces. I mean, if you would think about like four forces that represent the universe, you'd think about light, you'd think about heat, you'd think about speed, you know, things like that. I mean, you know, something.
Well, they're concepts. They're not really.
Something more fundamental to the fabric of reality, as opposed to like wisdom and wonder and mystery and entropy. Which I kind of see wisdom, wonder, and mystery being a thing. They're three kind of common things, but entropy kind of doesn't fit with the other three. It's a weird kind of thing. But anyway, these four beings are going around different planets, and they're basically destroying the planets unless they find that planet to be in balance or something. There's got to be like four world trees that are on each planet that represent those things. And if one of them is more powerful than the other, then that being will come and he'll be drawn to that planet and he'll destroy that planet. And so basically the gist of that, these things come and eat all these worlds. He's eventually coming to Earth. We've got to stop him. And
they're
so
on Kulu now.
But they're on Kulu right now, and so we got to go stop him there. If we can stop him there, they'll never make it to Earth. But you know what? I fixed it so that if we don't stop them there, they're coming to Earth next. So we better be successful. Okay. Well, I also find it a little bit odd that Brainiac is this worried about Kulu, because he sort of left his own people behind a long time ago, I thought. And so there's some kind of sentimentality that he's showing towards his people. Seems
well, maybe
kinda...
it'll ultimately turn out that Brainiac really doesn't care about his own planet, but the fact that, seeing as he's the one who usually takes knowledge and everything, that's ultimately his goal. He'll probably...
So it's just coincidental that they're here. Yeah, that's possible.
Well, no, not them. I'm saying he might be using the Justice League for his own purposes.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. Because if nothing else, at the end of the day, what's Brainiac going to do in a universe that doesn't have anything left in it?
Yeah.
So, but I just seem like, to me, it's almost like he was going out of his way to try and get them to stop this before Kulu gets destroyed. And so from that point of view, it seemed like he cares about his planet and his people. I'm not sure. So, we also find out that they're not just heroes on this ship, that he's brought along a number of villains, including people like Starro the Conqueror. Oh my God! Lobo.
Which is funny because Starro's like, I should just take over y'all's brain.
Well, the first thing Starro says is, Bwahaha, now this is the Justice League. So you've got Sinestro, you've got Starro, you've got
Lex Luthor.
You got Lex Luthor, you got Etrigan the Demon, you got Deathstroke, Lobo, just to name a few. And so Brainiac says, we got to put you guys on teams, again, that center around certain common features so that that team is best suited to accomplish certain goals. So I'll break you up into the groups that I think you need to be broke up into, and each of you will attack one of these four beings, these Omega Titans. Well, Amanda Waller, who never appeared in a comic book that she didn't mess things up. I hate Amanda Waller. I have always hated Amanda Waller. And so Amanda Waller is in this thing, and she was like, oh, well, we have the world's greatest psychics here in a collective hive mind wired together, and we're going to strip all of the information out of Brainiac's head. We can do this because even though he's light years away, these powerful psychics are all being souped up and amped up by the Queen Industry satellites. I was like, what? That's a little weird. So they've hijacked the Queen Industry satellites around the Earth to form some kind of satellite network which can pierce through time and space to where Brainiac is and pierce his mind and pull data out of his mind. Why does she want the data? Because, well, you never miss an opportunity to learn more information if you're in the government, you know, espionage business, right? And so the fact that she didn't know about this dark multiverse is bothering her. And the fact that she doesn't know that there even was a source wall, let alone now it's broke, is bothering her. And so Amanda Waller goes, well, what else don't I know about? Well, she's going to find out. She's going to learn all the secrets that Brainiac knows. That's her ultimate goal here. Well, Brainiac, in trying to... They form that attack, right? And, of course, this happens in amongst all this squabbling that's going on between heroes and villains. I'll never be on a team with you. Oh, yes, you will if you want to accomplish what we need to accomplish, blah, blah, blah. The villains act like they're particularly just enjoying this. You know, Sinestro is particularly repugnant, and Starfire. And she can't stand the idea of being on a team with Sinestro. Robin, Damian, is also having major problems. I'm like, Dad, you're not seriously considering going along with this, are you? Sometimes you got to do what you got to do, Robin. Yeah, but these are bad guys. Sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do, Robin.
Well, he also tells him, he's like, don't worry. No matter what, you're gonna be within eyesight of me anyway.
Right, you don't have to be split up from me. And he also tells him that even though we're going along with this, we're just doing it for now.
Yeah.
And then when the moment comes and it doesn't make sense to do that anymore, then we're out
of it. Well, he makes a big thing to Brainiac. He just basically says, look, these teams don't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
There are some of us that have three people, some have four, some have five.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you think this is going to work?
Right. And so Brainiac goes into more detail about, you know, why he split them up the way they split them up and how one team is better at handling things because they're magical-based and another team is better at handling things because they're technology-based, so forth and so on. So that's the reason he split them up into groups he split them up. Well, they get to Kaloo. And they're just about, Brainiac is just about telling them exactly what they need to know in order to fight these guys. He's like, you're going to go to these four trees that grow on this planet. The wisdom tree is the strongest because these are people that pride themselves on their intellect. But there's also mystery and hope and wonder and all the other ones. They said they're also, those trees exist too, they're just not as strong. But there's something going on, an incursion at each of those sites, and you need to go to those trees and do something there in order to prevent this Armageddon from taking over my world. And said, and whatever you do, don't forget. And about that time, his head explodes. So he's getting ready to tell him, like, the most important part. This is how it's going to work. When you get there, you'll see a magical key. And before you can grab the magical key, you must speak the secret incantation. And boom, his head blows up. Now, that magical key and incantation part was made up. But you understand the gist of what I'm saying. In that he was giving them exactly the information they needed to be successful, and now Brainiac's been taken out of the game because Amanda Waller with her team of psychics, made up of some of the most powerful psychic entities on Earth. I mean, Maxwell Lord was in that group. Double X from Project Cadmus, which I've not seen in forever, was in that group. Despero was in that group. There's a bunch of people in it. It's a lot of people I didn't recognize. The guy with the big head from Green Lantern, what's his name? I forget.
The one that was in the movie.
Yeah, the one that was in the movie. I keep forgetting his name. He was in the group. So everybody that's got psychic powers in the DC Universe was in this large room, all sitting in laid-back recliner-like looking chairs, and all wired into this powerful psychic hive mind, if you will. But Brainiac, I guess, has some defenses for that kind of thing, and as they tried to pierce his brain, he tried to put up a wall, and it overloaded him, and his head explodes. So now, here your heroes are faced looking at these giant four Omega Titans with no clue about how they're going to take them out or to defeat them. So
Jim is there.
Jim who?
You know, the red guy.
What red guy?
Like the equivalent of Martian Manhunter. Never mind, it doesn't matter.
Oh, in the psychic room. Yeah. I thought you meant on the ship. No. Yeah,
Jim.
Yeah.
You know he's truly, truly, truly outrageous.
Right. So that's where we end. This seems pretty good. It's a little more grounded than Dark Knight's Metal was, so I'm excited about that. It's a little easier to comprehend and get all the pieces. Even though bits of it still kind of don't make any sense, the whole idea of what these Omega Titans are. And what, the thing about it is I've seen this particular storyline in comic books done like 100 times. I remember back when Superman was being done by like Jurgens and crew. This is back when Superman had the electric blue outfit. And there were these four big entities.
The Millennium Giants.
The Millennium Giants that came to Earth to basically do the same thing. And so it's a running trope in comics that occasionally...
Well, bigger, badder, bad guy.
Right. That occasionally some kind of cosmic entity or group of cosmic entities show up.
Remember Imperiex?
Imperiex, yes, absolutely. Basically...
Because when Imperiex came to Earth, Superman beat him. And he's like, well, that was nothing. And then they sold him as like, look, that wasn't Imperiex.
Yeah, that was like his...
That was basically an Imperiex robot. You haven't met Imperiex yet.
Right. So he's the biggest, baddest you've ever heard of, right? It's basically a run on the idea of Behind Galactus.
Yeah.
I think Stan Lee and Jack Kirby did it first when they did Galactus. And so since then, there have been these stories where these giant cosmic entities come to Earth to mess things up. And it's not all that unlike what's going on this week in Avengers, which we'll get to in just a second. So, Charlie, you wanted to talk to the audience about a comic book called Isola.
Yes.
What do you think of that?
Isola is a book done by Carl Kerschel and Brendan Fletcher. They do the story. Mm-hmm. Carl Kerschel and Masasik does the art. And Aditya Bidikar does the letters. And for one thing, if you look at this book is amazingly almost like animation. Like, it's beautiful to look at.
Right.
And that's kind of the reason I'm reading it. They haven't really delved into the story a lot, but there's this girl and she's with this mystical tiger who she keeps referring to as a god.
Okay.
And she has to like protect the god and take her to a town. Like, get her, like she has to travel with her and mm-hmm. protect her and feed her and whatever.
Right.
But that's their god. And like I said, so far there's not been a lot going on. There's not really a lot of character development going on.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, for mostly I'm like reading it just because of the art and everything. But like, it's really like kind of interesting. But I'll have to delve further into it when it broadens out a little bit more.
And it fleshes out.
Yeah.
Cool. It's the way you describe that with the wolf or whatever, or the tiger, excuse me, it reminds me a little bit, since you were talking about animation, of Princess Mononoke and how the gods of the forest were animals.
Well, yeah, it's kind of funny. Well, I think they're about the only animals in the book, except for, like, horses. But I always, like, look at the god tiger. Mm-hmm. Reminds me of Cringer.
Oh, he does, because he's mostly greenish.
Well, that, but, like, he's his, like, stripes glow and everything. Well, that's like cool. I said, it's interesting. It kind of reminds me of Avatar 2, the way the art is.
Right.
Like I said, it's really nice looking and beautiful. And
see, it's good that you can...
Simple story.
You can branch out and check out some books like that that are interesting. Because of my reduced budget, I mean, when we did the show last, I had all kinds of excess money to spend. And so I would read 20, 25 books a week. Now I'm reading 5 books a week. Which means that my selection has gotten much narrower, especially since some publishers are shipping twice a month. And so I'm mostly reading, like, Superman titles and a few Marvel things and maybe a Justice League. And that's about it. And so I worry that my reviews here are going to get, oh, he's talking about Superman again. Because, you know, it just will be all that I seem like I read for the most part. But I'm glad that you are able to pick up that stuff that I wouldn't have known about otherwise. Avengers number 1. I was looking forward to this, Charlie. You know why?
Well, it's actually Legacy number 691.
Oh, well, right.
Seeing as they made a big deal numbering. And
going back to the original
we're
numbering.
We're not going to do legacy numbering. No, we are going to do legacy numbering. Yet, no, we're not going to do legacy numbering. Yes, it's going to be on there. It's like what we did with other books. Mm-hmm. It's basically just another rebranding.
Right.
Instead of being all new, the best Avengers number 1.
Right.
It's just plain old
Marvel
Avengers
Now, back. Avengers Reboot Now number 1.
Reboot 31. That's basically all this is. But they're keeping the legacy numbering.
Well, yeah, because in the upper left-hand corner, there are two numbers. It says 1, and then below it, it's got LGY Legacy number 691. So even though we've got different numbering, we still know where we're at.
Yeah.
As far as the original numbering is concerned. So that when we need to do the 700th issue, it'll be Avengers 700.
But it'll actually be 9.
Right. So, all right. So
first complaint about this book.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Because I was going to say, you know what?
McGinnis is doing it.
Right. That's what I was excited about.
And that's why I'm buying it mainly. I like it, Jason Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly it's for the McGinnis artwork.
Right.
But how long is he going to be on it?
Well, 4 issues, maybe.
5, 6 at most.
First arc, and that's if he makes it through the first arc.
Well, he'll make it through the first arc because McGinnis isn't usually late. Well, what I'm saying is...
Well, does it just cost too much to keep him on? I don't know,
but that's what I'm saying. It's like, how long are we going to have him on here?
Now, I heard some recent podcaster, and I'll not name name, said that they didn't like McGinnis anymore, that they used to, but that they felt that his style was very dated. It felt very late 90s, early 2000s, which is kind of when McGinnis came to fame, and that his style hasn't changed. And
love Liefeld, and he's not changed.
What's my point? I didn't know once you had a style that you were required to change, or else it was somehow considered passé and unoriginal.
Now, I have seen some things
Does
recently.
Does Frank Miller change? Frank Miller's artwork looks like Frank Miller's artwork's always changed.
I will say that I've seen some of the stuff lately of McGinnis's I didn't like the Spider-Man Red Goblin redesign that he did. I just think that's terrible.
Was it bad artwork or was it bad design?
It's a bad design.
Yeah.
It's basically just like...
Did he do the design?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's basically just the Red Goblin, the Green Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, instead of clothes, he's not wearing any.
Right.
So he looks more like Carnage there.
Okay.
And his head is red. And that's it, basically.
So it just looks like...
He's got swirly eyes.
So it looks like a combination between Green Goblin and Carnage.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all he is, really.
So it was just bad design.
Yeah, it's bad redesign.
But I was excited about this. We got a sneak peek at this back when Marvel Legacy came out. Or what was
it? No.
Yeah, when that book came out, that it was previewing all the stuff coming up.
They never previewed this.
Well, yeah, it did because it had... Well, and it might not have had McGinnis artwork in it, but it previewed the story because it had the 1 million year ago stuff in it.
Except there was someone not in that one. The Starbrand Hulk.
Yeah.
In that. which I thought was really
well,
weird.
What a way to work Hulk into your million years ago Avengers is by saying the Star Brand character from then happens to be a caveman who looks exactly like Hulk. So, okay, that's
because I saw the artwork a couple months ago. I was like, what the heck is this new universe Hulk?
Yeah, well, that's when Banner comes back from the dead. That's what he looks like.
No,
is he back from the dead yet, by the way?
Yeah, he came.
He showed
up in the Avengers like 4 issues ago.
Well, see, I wanted to read that weekly series, but I didn't.
It was like a 16-part weekly series.
Well,
like $5 each every week.
A little much.
That's what I said. I said, who in the world is going to follow this for six? Never mind.
We're off topic.
He just showed up.
Okay.
At the end of one book, I think he fought the...
What does it say?
He fought the new Red Hulk in the American Patriot armor.
What? Oh, my God. I've been out of things so long. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the new Red Hulk who isn't Thunderbolt Ross.
He's not. Who is the Red Hulk now? Or do we know?
Well, yeah, we know because he was in Uncanny Avengers.
Okay.
U.S. Avengers.
Okay.
And he's basically Our Man.
Our Man.
Except for when he...
When you say Our Man, I think about the JSA.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But instead of...
Well, is he a new Marvel character that's got Our Man-like abilities, or is he an existing Marvel
character?
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
It's like Our Man, except for where Our Man pops the pill or hits the needle, takes the vitamin or whatever, and gains Our Power.
The Our Power. It sounds like a church program.
This army general dude... Hits this watch thing, and it turns him into the Red Hulk for about an hour.
Okay.
And it's not Ross.
Can he turn it off, or...
No, he's just...
So he's stuck like that for an hour.
Yeah, but apparently, like, every time he does it, too, he has the power less and less, too.
Oh, so it's wearing off.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why he needed the American Patriot.
But they didn't take somebody like Doc Samson or somebody and make him the Red Hulk. This is a new person.
Okay. Yeah, it's a new person.
All right, that's what I was asking.
I think that's how that happened. I'm not real sure, but I think that's how that happened. And then he disappeared.
Okay.
And I think Immortal Hulk will be coming out first issue, like, in a couple of weeks or something like that.
Do we know how he came back from the dead, or he just showed up? And that'll be explained later. Okay, well, that's cool then. All right, so apparently...
It's like, I think the artwork shows up in this book somewhere.
Apparently, within the Avengers Marvel world, there are certain hero concepts that get passed down. Now, Marvel has... A lot of people... Oh, is that what it is? Okay. Charlie showed me a preview from the Immortal Hulk.
June comes out in June.
Okay. There are certain... You know, we've always complained that DC understands legacy heroes, right?
Yeah.
DC, you've got characters like Green Lantern, and you've got characters like The Flash that existed in the Golden Age, and then over time they handed down to new characters, and there have been several different Green Lanterns, several different Flashes, whether they were people like Hawkman or Our Man or a lot of other JSA-type characters that ended up changing hands as the mantle moved from person to person. DC's been great at that, and they've been doing it for years. Marvel, not so much. Marvel seems to exist in a perpetual now state where nothing really changes. The same Spider-Man that's always been running around is still running around. The same Captain America, the same Thor, the same Iron Man.
No, that's not true.
Well, I understand they've had a few changes over time.
But they never stick.
But they never stick. They always go back to the originals. And DC's had their problems with that, too. I mean, you know, certain characters had came back. Geoff Johns, who decided that Silver Age was great, decided to bring certain characters back at DC about 10 or so years ago. And so he brought back Hal Jordan, he brought back Barry Allen. Not to say that we didn't love those characters too, but they had moved on, and we were fine with the other people we had in their place, or at least I was.
Yeah.
I was fine with Wally West, I was fine with, you know, Jon Stewart and Kyle Rayner and all those guys.
Yeah.
And but they brought some of those guys back too. You know, I didn't agree with the decision, but there it is.
Yeah, because Jon Stewart became a Dark Star. And
right.
Who those guys are back now in the DC universe.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah, that was part of the metal thing.
Okay. Well, I may have not realized what it was talking about then. But the point is that we've always complained that, like I said, Doctor Strange been running around all this time. Doctor Strange is still Doctor Strange. I mean, sure, he handed it off to Brother Voodoo for a while, but now he's Doctor Strange again. He's still the Sorcerer Supreme. Nothing changes in the Marvel Universe. Now, they do add certain characters from time to time in order to keep their quotas up for public consumption and political correctness. And so we've added a lot of new ethnic characters in the last little bit. We've added the new Miss Marvel. We've added certain other characters in order to diversify the Marvel brand. And that's fine. That's good. They should do that. Miles Morales, characters like that. But for the most part, your old stalwart characters are still there. And they will always be there. And so, I guess, Marvel's trying to make the case here that there are certain concepts that have been handed down over time. We just weren't aware of it. And so there have always been an Avengers with different people at the helm.
Even a million years ago.
Even a million before man existed. Before man came out of the caves, if you will.
Well, not really, because two or three of them are riding around in this Avengers thing.
Yeah. So I think the timeline there is a little off. I think a million years ago was a little too far to go back. Should have been
50,000.
You know, 30,000 years ago, something like that would have been fine, but okay.
I think it's just a strategy just to get the million in there.
Sure.
Or something like that.
Yeah, we've been doing this longer than anybody else.
Yeah, we're the original.
So apparently the cosmic concepts that have handed down over time are, you've got to have an Asgardian god. So instead of Thor, they had Odin. You've got to have...
And Odin looks suspiciously like...
Like who?
Thor.
Oh, well, yeah, of course, because he was younger. And, well, haven't you seen the Thor comics from the future that Jason Aaron wrote? Old Man Thor looked exactly like Odin with full beard and everything.
Well, yeah.
So, basically, Thor is Odin reincarnated. He looks exactly like him at that age, whatever that age is.
Yeah.
But you've also got characters like the Iron Fist. So, apparently, there was always an Iron Fist. It just wasn't always Danny Rand.
We already mentioned Starbrand.
Yeah, the Starbrand character, the Starbrand Hulk.
Which New Universe never showed up until the mid-80s, but that's fine.
They existed a million years ago, we just didn't know it.
Phoenix, who is a...
cosmic entity.
Who is a...
Who's a what?
In this book, she's a what?
She's a love interest of Odin.
But...
But what?
She's a...
She's a woman?
With...
powers?
No.
Well, I don't know what you're getting at.
She's a red-haired woman.
Oh, sure. Oh, okay. Right, because the Phoenix doesn't inhabit just any woman. The Phoenix doesn't inhabit a blonde bombshell from Norway. No, she only inhabits redheads. Okay, everybody knows that. Or it could be that she didn't have red hair previously, and once the Phoenix Force invades you, it turns red. Yeah, that's possible.
They didn't have an Emma Frost when all five of them got there.
Anyway...
Agamotto.
Agamotto. That was really cool. I'd like to know more about him because I like Doctor Strange.
Don't worry, there'll probably be a new ongoing Agamotto.
That would be great. I would want to check that out. If Jason Aaron's writing it, I'll read it.
The original Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, okay. And I don't know what vehicle. Does it have it in here? Does the Ghost Rider ride something? Hey, oh, he rides a woolly mammoth. Yeah. Woolly mammoth.
On fire.
On fire, woolly mammoth. That's great. And then there's a Black Panther. Whoever was the king of Wakanda at that time is the Black Panther. So you have all of these Avengers, pre-Avengers, and they're getting ready for this epic battle, and they keep making things like, well, there's no way we're going to live through this. They keep making those kinds of statements. And Thor keeps hitting on the Phoenix because apparently they're in a relationship.
Of course.
And
there's got to be that love interest.
Odin. I keep mixing them up. Odin's over there, and he's drinking ale, and he even offers ale to the cavemen, and he's like, y'all love this, get you some of this. And they're all just, like, preparing for this epic battle that they know they're going to die. In fact, I think it was the Iron Fist that asked Agamotto if there was any chance of them making it through this battle, and he said if it was any mere battle, we would probably be victorious, but not against the foe we face this day. And as you pan out and look, oh, the Celestials have showed up.
Yeah.
And so the Celestials have showed up, and they've come to make war with Earth. All right, so we pan from that then to current day. So we don't know what happened in that epic fight. And that epic fight will probably be spelled out for us over this whole first arc.
Yeah.
Because that's a traditional Marvel thing to do, is they'll keep giving us bits and pieces of that.
In the last issue, it'll be a flashback to, yes, we survived the day.
Oh, we finally managed to survive. The last page of the last issue of the last arc will be those old Avengers standing triumphant over the Celestials somehow or another.
But I would almost think that they did die.
That's
fine. And their powers got passed.
Well, maybe. Well, Odin was around, you know, recently.
Well, I'm saying Odin might be the only one.
Maybe was the only one.
Because all the other ones seem more magical inspired. And,
right.
Or whatever the new universe star brand thing is. I don't know. I've never read new universe stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. So, fast forward into current day, and here is Iron Man, Captain America, and Thor all sitting around having a drink. And they're talking about the good old days. And these are characters who have all been through something recently. They've all, you know... Tony was an Iron Man for a while. You had that young girl.
He was brain dead.
Yeah, he was brain dead. Thor was the unworthy Thor, so he didn't have Mjolnir for a while.
He still doesn't.
Well, what's this golden-looking hammer? What's that? It's not Mjolnir.
No.
I thought it was Mjolnir. Okay, my bad. I just thought it was golden-looking.
No, he's still unworthy.
Oh, he is?
Because at the end of the last issue of...
Well, I know that Jane...
Yeah, Jane Foster. She didn't die.
Oh, she didn't?
No.
I thought they had a memorial issue for her.
Yeah, but it was...
I'm not reading it. I just heard.
Mighty Thor that died.
Oh, the character she turns into.
Yeah.
Okay.
She doesn't die. And at the end, to defeat
See, a lot of our podcasts these first few weeks are just going to be us catching up on what's happened.
No, to defeat the old creature that he's fought before, I can't remember what it's called, it destroyed Mjolnir.
Oh, did so just like the movies.
Yeah. And so, like, at the end of the
last... So did he go to the dwarves and he get a new hammer? Is that what this is?
But they haven't explained it yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
But, like, at the end of that book, she gives him a little piece of Mjolnir that's, like, about...
The Uru metal?
Like, this big.
That little speck.
And he puts it in her... She puts it in his hand. He's like, ugh, it's so heavy. I can't believe that... Even this little bit of amount is this heavy that I still can't lift it.
Wow.
So yeah, that's a totally different hammer. Who knows where that's come from?
Okay. So he's sitting around and they're talking, and here's Captain America, who was recently Hydra Cap. So all these characters have gone through something. They've kind of had their characters, their reputation besmirched in some way. They're not as popular and they're not as stainless and spotless as they used to be. And so they're talking about the good old days, and they're going, well, you know, the good old days can be good again. We should restart the Avengers. And Tony's like, ah, man, that's a younger man's game. There are other kids who've come up and are able to do that now. Let them handle it. And basically, Captain America and Thor both like, no, we think we should be in charge of the Avengers, and we should be doing that, and that should be our thing. Because at the end of the day, everybody else comes and goes, but we three... And I'm paraphrasing. This is not word for word what it says. We three are the ones who stand in the eye of the storm every time. And so even though we've been through some things and our reputations are not what they used to be, at the end of the day, when the world is besieged, it'll be us standing against the tide. And that's why we need to lead the Avengers.
And I think it's funny because at one point Captain America's about to say, well, you know, Avengers, and Tony goes, don't you even dare finish that line.
Yeah, because he didn't really say assemble. So, basically, they bully Stark into it, and Stark kind of half-heartedly agrees to, all right, we can look into it, you know. Well, about that time, there's...
We'll start thinking about members or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so...
So, it's almost like the DC Trinity coming in to, like...
Well, I've seen this story before.
Who's going to be on the Justice League?
Because you remember the Brad Meltzer run on Justice League, where the three were sitting down looking at profile pictures of everybody, right? So
but instead of pictures, we get, like, mini snippets of... What's going on with all these other characters that are eventually going to be on the team.
Right. So, we get a quick flash to Black Panther and Doctor Strange, who are in some part of the world, and they've gone down to this archaeological burial site, and they found, like, these holes that have been... And there's off-the-chart readings, and they're making all the Geiger counters go crazy and stuff, and he goes, we need to... And Doctor Strange's like, I sense magical energy here, and...
Well, did you hear Doctor Strange's line? He's like, you know, a couple months ago, there were these people called the Empiricrul.
Empiricrul, yeah.
Who took away all magic. He said a couple months ago.
Yeah.
That happened about 25 issues ago.
Yeah, something like that. Well, you know, in the comic book time, yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, when did Aaron just start this run? Was he promised an earlier?
Well, I don't know. He may have had this rope for a long time.
That's what I'm wondering.
So,
or if it is truly comic book time and
things just happen quickly.
Yeah.
So yeah, because all the characters would be 40, 50 years older, right? So they both agree that they should track these caves and these holes down to where they go. And they go, we're going to the freaking center of the earth. Well, come on, let's go then. And so they start going down through there. You flash to the new Ghost Rider character, which I don't know much about. But apparently instead of driving a motorcycle, he drives like this big muscle car. And he's got this younger brother that looks up to him. So he doesn't want his brother to figure out he's his
Ghost Rider. Well, he's possessed by the spirit of his dead uncle.
Oh, it's not the spirit of vengeance?
It's not Zerg. No, it's not him.
So is that why he looks majorly different?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the same basic concept. He turns into this thing with the flaming car.
Because his uncle was like a serial killer and died.
Oh, so he's not going out looking for vengeance against the evildoers? He's actually going out doing bad things or what?
No. When his uncle died, his spirit zapped into him.
Right.
And was starting to be that way. But he's kind of force corrected him.
Okay.
Force corrected the spirit.
So when he goes out as Ghost Rider, he does good then. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So I didn't know if his uncle was making him kill people or something. All right, so you get a bit of that. You also get a bit of Jennifer Walters, who apparently is still the angry She-Hulk. And so she's walking through town and somebody hits on her.
She's not the gray She-Hulk now.
No, she's green, yeah.
Yeah, because she was gray for like the last 10 issues of her series.
Okay, I didn't know anything about that. So again, this is me catching up. some guy hits on her, makes some cat calls, as guys are wanting to do sometimes, and it's all she could do not to rip his face off. But when she turns and looks at him, she looks at him kind of mean, and her face is green, like, he looks like the Green Goblin or something. Arr! And he goes, and he runs off. She goes, stay calm. Alright, and you get Captain Marvel, and Captain Marvel is up here in outer space, and there's this big wormhole thing opening up. And guess what? Ta-da! It's a dead celestial body coming through the wormhole.
There's a bunch of celestials that fall to Earth.
Yeah. And like, so, these.
Like, go ahead. You know, I've been trying to wrap my head around it. There's got to be like different sizes of celestials.
Okay.
Because there's one in California.
Mm-hmm.
That's like.
It's as big as a building.
Is standing there. Yeah. It's that big.
Is it still there? Is it not moved at all? I don't remember. Think so. Okay.
I'm not real sure. I'm not kept up with that part.
I'm not reading Avengers West Coast, so I don't know.
Well, that was in primarily the X-Men. But, like, this one falls in London, and it looks like it basically takes up, like, the whole... Or one falls in New York. Yeah, they all fall, like, different places.
Right.
It's like they're way huge.
Yeah, this one in New York is, like, taking up the whole Hudson River just about.
But what I'm saying is, like, in Guardians of the Galaxy, Nowhere was basically a space station.
Mm-hmm.
Just his head alone. So I'm like, I think the one that was in Los Angeles was like a shorter one or a younger one or something like that.
Yeah, he was a baby. I'm not sure. He was a baby. So, our three main heroes, Captain America and Iron Man and Thor, get this warning that there's something coming into the Earth's atmosphere. The celestial body crashes down and they're trying to help with that. Meanwhile, in the middle of the Earth, Black Panther and Doctor Strange are currently in the Aliens movie.
As they discover a bunch of eggs.
They discover a bunch of eggs, and they start hatching, and things start coming out of them.
And they start to attack Robbie
on the surface. They're burrowing up through the ground. And so you got all this going on, and Captain Marvel is doing her best to mitigate the damage of the following celestial bodies.
Not doing a great job.
No, she's not doing a great job.
Because the London Bridge is almost destroyed.
There's one laying beside the pyramids in Egypt.
There's one in, I don't know what city it is.
Yeah, just some random city. Could be L.A., could be anywhere. And so they're basically hitting the ground everywhere. So as all these heroes are rallying to the cause, there suddenly appears three Celestials who don't appear to be just...
Well, they look unlike the other Celestials because the other Celestials
are
kind of similar.
They look a lot like Jack Kirby New Gods because that's Jack Kirby's the one that created it, right? And so these don't look exactly like that. These look different. They're similar in size, but their makeup is completely, when I say makeup, I'm not talking about facial paint. I'm talking about what they're composed of are way different. And so basically, these Celestials, of course you get the big splash page at the end that says Avengers Assemble, but they introduce themselves at one point, I thought. Don't they say we are the final host or something like that? Maybe not. Maybe it's not in this issue. But anyway, they show up. So basically, you've got all these dead Celestials falling to the ground, and you got three live ones. And from what
it just says Earth Now, the final host.
Okay. Oh, the final host. That's what they call them. The final host are the name of these. Because I think a million years ago, if we flash back, they were the first host. I think that's what it says in the beginning of the book. I have to go back and check it. But the point is, the final host are the last ones to show up. And I don't know what that means for the Earth. Is it like some harbinger of destruction or something? I don't know. What they appears to me like maybe they've killed the other Celestials and caused them to fall to Earth. I'm not sure why. So there's a lot needs to be explained in this. But basically,
it just says the first Celestial host.
Right. And this is the final host. So the idea is that there's...
Well, they've dropped the word Celestial too.
Oh, well, maybe they're not Celestials. And I don't know what they are. But we'll find out as we go. The genesis of this story, if I could wrap this whole story in a nutshell, it's that the Avengers...
Basically, they broke the source wall and these
Omega Titans have showed up to destroy the world. Right. And so we needed a reason to get an Avengers team together again, and this is the rallying cry that'll bring this new team together, and all these people that we've showcased throughout the book will be on the team, including this brand new Ghost Rider, Captain Marvel, and all the like. So
She-Hulk. Captain America, Thor, Iron Man.
Right, and Doctor Strange, which is cool. Like Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange is really cool because I haven't read a lot of Avengers books with him on the team. I've read a lot of books where he gets consulted. He goes, well, let's go see Doctor Strange and he'll tell us what to do. And they go see Doctor Strange and he tells them what to do and they go do it. But he's not really involved very much. It's kind of like during Civil War. They went and talked to Doctor Strange and or was that during the Skrull Invasion? They went and talked to Doctor Strange. But Doctor Strange was like, I can't help you. And he set that one out.
Well, when Hulk invaded Earth, he basically sat it out until he decided, like, look, I'm just going to...
So, but all right. Fight. But at the end of the day, the reason to read this book is Ed McGuinness' artwork. If you are an Ed McGuinness fan, some people like it, some people don't. That's why I'm here. And I love Jason Aaron as a writer, but the McGuinness artwork really makes it sing. All right, Charlie, Venom number one, you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, this is a new book written by Donny Cates, art by Ryan Stegman.
Wasn't there a book that Bagley did with Venom? Or is that over?
That's over.
So this is a new number one. Because that hasn't been very long ago.
This is a new number one or is it Legacy 166.
Okay, it's the same series. They've just...
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. All right.
J.P. Mayer is the inker. Frank Martin is the colorist. And VC's Clayton Cowles is the letterer. Well, in this book, Eddie Brock is having a bunch of nightmare visions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's not the one having them, though.
Okay.
It's the Venom symbiote having them.
Oh, I didn't know Venom symbiotes had
Venom. Well, that's the thing. It's like he wakes up and Venom, he's like, what's going on, Venom? What are those nightmares?
Hey, Venom, old pal.
We've never had those before.
I don't know, Raggy.
And Venom says, no, those are something new. Now let's, because he's been trying to slow down the Venom symbiote, and he's been taking these antipsychotic pills.
Okay.
And when he takes the antipsychotic pills, he can deaden Venom's voice. I don't know how that works.
You can't.
Don't
hear
ask
it.
Me, because it seems to me that
they're independent.
If it's an
creatures.
Actual creature in your head, you can actually hear it. I don't know.
It's not like he's imagined it.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, the thing is, when he uses the psychoactive drugs, it kind of stops it, okay? But, like, when he goes down and, like, tries to help with himself because he got fired from his previous job.
Mm-hmm.
So, he goes down by himself. I guess he's, like, going to see what he can do without getting Venom involved. And he's trying to... There's a new jack-o'-lantern who's selling weapons to these regular criminals. Well, when he goes down there, something goes on, and, like, there's a big brouhaha, and Venom takes over.
Okay.
And when Venom takes over, he becomes all red and veiny, and he starts speaking a different language.
Okay.
And he doesn't know what's going on, but he basically, like, wastes everyone there. And there's this big, huge explosion, and this guy comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, like, hey, Thompson, I need you to come with me. Because he thinks it's Flash Thompson.
Right.
Agent Venom. And we don't know what happened to Agent Venom because of what's going on in Spider-Man, which hasn't wrapped up yet.
Okay.
So, Eddie wakes up, and he's like, what's going on? I don't know you. And, like, the Venom is like, you know, let's get out of here. I can just break us out real quickly. And the guy's like, look, you might not be Flash Thompson, but I need you to help me, and here's why. You might think you're the first alien symbiote, but symbiotes have been here for a while.
Oh, wow, okay. Like from a million years ago?
No. Since, like, the 70s.
Oh, okay. Because shortly after Roswell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not shortly, like 10 years after.
Whatever. Okay. Well, that's not long.
But basically, like, he says, like, back in Vietnam, I was part of a group. A bunch of us, like, were in a
unit.
A unit, an army unit.
Right.
And we all had Venom. We all had symbiotes.
All of them.
We okay. The army's been using symbiotes.
Oh, as weapons.
As weapons. We're a special assault team, right?
Uh-huh.
Because, like,
while maybe you can find the V-team.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, while he's talking, the Venom tries to, like, sneak up and, like, attack the guy. And the guy's like, well, the guy's asking Eddie a bunch of questions. He's like, you don't know anything about the suit, do you? You don't know that, like, it can retard age? Because, like, he's like, look at me. I'm a lot older than I seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
Dude looks about 60 anyway.
Right. So he must be 150.
And he's like, or that fact that's like, you're basically invulnerable, blah, 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 blah. So he's telling him all this stuff. And when the symbiote tries to attack him, he, like, puts, like, a fire up to it. And he goes, boy, I know things more about these symbiotes than you'll ever learn. I've forgotten things more about these symbiotes than you'll ever learn. So the guy tells him, he's like, look, my buddies are being attacked. I need you to help me, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And I need you to go find them. They're down this tunnel.
I'm kind of surprised he just didn't ask for the symbiote.
Yeah. So
I need to borrow your suit for a few minutes.
Well, I'm sure Eddie would have gladly given it to him because at this point, I guess
he doesn't want it at all.
He doesn't know how it'll overreact or anything. So he goes to find these guys.
Just to clarify, the Venom symbiote that he's got on is the same one that he always used to have.
Yes.
Okay, it's not a different Venom, not a different symbiote. Okay, all
right. It's changed hands.
Well, I didn't know if maybe there were another symbiote that was like it or something. You know, like I say, I know there have been more than one.
Well, now, because when it was on Flash Thompson, it wanted to go back to Eddie, but, like, Flash still retained part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, instead of becoming Agent Venom, he got changed into Agent Anti-Venom. So it was basically a white character.
And right, and I remember that. Venom
out there.
I think I was reading Spider-Man when that happened.
Well, there was a guy who stole it. The one who started out with the symbiote in this series.
Mm-hmm.
That was done by Bagley and the other guy.
Right.
Who had the symbiote for, like, a couple days before it went back to Eddie Brock.
Mm-hmm.
And he used it to, like, become, like, a gangland boss.
Mm-hmm.
Where basically they were all had Venom heads. And he called himself Chaos, who was, like, Agent Venom's sidekick, who he stole her symbiote. It's complicated.
Okay.
We'll just go with this one, right?
Okay.
Yes, this is Venom that's always been Venom.
Was the Black Spider-Man costume at one point. Okay.
So he goes to find these guys, and they're in an underground facility, wherever he's at. I guess it's New York. And he's like, well, I'm sensing something. I'm hearing these noises that kind of remind me of the dream that I had from earlier. He's like, I don't know what's going on. Well, all of a sudden, these symbiotes come out of this, like, van or this, like, building and, like, start to attack him.
Right.
Well, he beats them all back, and they go back. At some point, they beat him off. They beat
him. What? Your hammer beats you off? It sounds like you had an intimate relationship with this hammer.
They get separated. The Venom symbiotes go back in this place, and there's this big explosion.
Uh-huh.
But then they say something, and Venom and Eddie asks the symbiote, he's like, well, what's going on? What'd they say? He's like, the symbiote tells him, he's like, this, what they said was, it's a dead language in my society,
mm-hmm.
because we found out that they were a whole race on a different planet that has been, that the language hasn't been used for a million years, but what they said is God is coming.
Right.
So, like, because all the guys that he was sent to go in, they're all dead. And the Venom symbiotes have been, aren't there anymore after this big explosion.
There's no trace of them. They're just gone.
They're just gone. And they said God is coming. So there's some symbiote God going to attack Earth.
The symbiote God. Okay, cool.
And I kind of worry about this because this pushes back the whole symbiote
idea.
Spider-Man idea even further back.
Right.
It's like, seriously, once again, can we not create new characters?
Right.
Why do we keep pushing everything backwards and backwards?
You're right, and undoing things and changing things. And
well, no, it's always like, it's like a movie, right?
Right.
It's like in like the second movie of a trilogy, usually, what happens? You learn something about the character's past you never knew before.
Right.
And that seems like what Marvel's doing now with this legacy stuff.
Right.
It's like, you think Iron Man is good? Well, you don't know what happened 25 years ago.
When he accosted that stewardess and took her against her will. That's right. Iron Man's a rapist.
But that's what I'm saying. They just keep, like, that's what, it seems to me like that's Marvel's new thing now. Because,
well, and their attempt to humanize, Marvel's always been, our characters more human.
Yeah.
So they've always had flaws.
Uh-huh.
They've always been the kind of, more relatable because they struggle with things you struggle with. But they're taking that too far now in the sense that everybody's got some dark, sinister, hidden secret.
Well, the funny thing is, it's like when they started this legacy thing, it was in response to DC Rebirth.
Right.
So you know what that was?
Mm-hmm.
It was basically old characters coming back from the dead,
mm-hmm.
who they thought were dead, and old enemies fighting newer characters. Like, ha-ha! It's Iron Fist, and look who he's fighting. He's fighting Mojo. You know, it's like, that's what they were doing. That's what their legacy thing was. And that's what they were doing in their legacy books. Because in the Scarlet Spider book,
mm-hmm.
he found out that one of the, the Slingers, Spider-Man's
right,
those, old teammates.
Sure, I remember that.
That were his split identities
right.
who formed their own supergroup. Well, the character, the Hornet, died in that.
Okay.
And there was a new Hornet that showed up in Scarlet Spider, the new Scarlet Spider series that came up. And, like, when the other characters came in, like Ricochet and Prodigy
mm-hmm.
and Dusk, they were like, well, that's not the Hornet. We don't know who this is. And we don't know what's going on.
Right.
Well, it turned out it was Cyber.
Cyber is
Wolverine's old enemy who has like adamantium arms.
Oh, okay.
So that's who that turned out to
completely
be.
Unrelated to Spider-Verse.
Yeah, completely unrelated to the Spider-Verse. That's what Marvel was doing with Legacy.
Okay. So this is a running thing. They did these in all their Legacy books.
They did that in all their Legacy books.
That's really kind of
stupid.
Or
like I said, you thought this character was dead. But no, they're back again, you
know?
And
facing a hero that they've never fought before for no reason.
Yeah.
Sounds really stupid. Really.
And that's why Legacy kind of failed, and that's why they're doing this new, fresh start, or whatever they're calling it.
I don't understand this. I mean, I understand the competition between companies, right? This thing between DC and Marvel has always existed to some degree. And to some degree, they've always copied each other, which is why you've got characters that are basically the same. You know, you've got your Quicksilvers and your Flashes, and you've got your Deadshots and Deadpools, different Deadpools and Wade Wilson and Slade Wilson and
Thanos and Darkseid.
Darkseid, right. So that's not all that uncommon. But when they take a publishing initiative and they copy that, doesn't even make any sense because everybody sees right through that.
Ah, yes, John. Good segue. Because you know what I'm about to talk about?
No, Charlie, what are you about to talk about?
DC's new characters.
Oh, okay.
That have sprung out of metal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know. So there's some new books coming up. Yeah. Right. All right. So we got like the Terrifics and some others.
The Immortal Men.
Right, right.
The Challengers. The New Challengers.
New Challengers.
Of the Sideways.
Unknown. Mm-hmm.
The Silencer.
Right.
The Curse of Brimstone. Damage.
Damage, right. It's the New Hulk. Yeah. Right.
Yes. It's basically DC.
Marvel characters.
Doing Marvel characters.
Right.
Which, I've read like three or four of them, and depending on what you like and who you like go towards.
What are you talking about, creators?
Yeah, you like that way. We'll kind of decide if you like or not like these books.
Right.
Because like The Immortal Man, I don't know what they're a takeoff of Marvel from, but they're done by Jim Lee and... they were created by Jim Lee, and what it is, it's kind of like a very 90s Jim Lee book, like how like, oh, these characters, they're all mysterious, and they were all snatched up before they died,
mm-hmm.
and they're all like, they're all working for this thing to like go out, right?
Right.
James Tynion IV, and I can't think of who the Benjamin guy is. Because I know he's the one who co-created it. But it's very, like I said, it's very 90s. Like, to the point is, like the characters just show up out of no reason. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden...
Fully formed characters,
yeah,
right.
Fully formed characters that they're just hunting.
With lots of pouches.
Well, no.
No,
But they're looking for this kid who is so special that the bad guys want to find him first.
Well, they've done that before.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
But then there's Sideways, who's a Spider-Man kind of clone, rip-off, or whatever.
Right.
Who creates these, little rifts, he calls them.
Mm-hmm.
He does this, and they turn into little Vs, and he can teleport.
Oh, okay, cool.
But it's
kind of like a cloak power.
Yeah, kind of, basically. Yeah. Well, it's got some humor in it, and it's kind of funny, and it's about a teenage kid. And, like, all the problems, like, his best friend is the one who created the costume.
Right.
His mom and dad don't know that he's this character, but he got beat up a couple weeks ago and was in the hospital. And I think that one's really good.
Kind of sounds like Kick-Ass just a little bit.
A little bit. It kind of is. It's kind of... But it's more Spider-Man where it's, like...
High school
problems, right. And stuff like that. Skipping
relationship stuff.
Well, not so far, but yeah.
That's bound to come into it. Yeah.
And, the Silencer is the Punisher.
Oh, okay.
The Punisher character. I don't know about that one because I'm not reading that one. But it deals with the League of Assassins, and I think the girl in that, I think she escaped them at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But she's a Punisher character.
Right.
The Curse of Brimstone is... Ghost Rider.
Okay.
I'm not reading that one or Damage either. I don't know about them. But I've read The Terrifics. That book is freaking great.
Oh, really?
It is.
Because none of these books, as I perused them, the previews, none of them struck at me and went, oh, I need to read that.
But
so I'm surprised it's that good.
But The Terrifics is, it's Mr. Terrific, Plastic Man, Metamorpho, in this girl who has intangibility powers.
So we're talking about...
It's basically the Fantastic Four.
Right. Okay.
But it's written by Jeff Lemire. And
you've got Mr. Fantastic in two characters. You got a character with stretchy powers, you got another character that's a brain.
Well, yeah, kind of, basically.
Yeah. That's
but he's supposed to represent...
Plastic Man also is the Human Torch character, probably, because he's...
Metamorpho.
Oh, Metamorpho, okay.
Metamorpho is... Well,
I thought he'd be Grimm.
Well, it's
all know. The elements are there.
Yeah, they're there. Like,
all the elements, but they're not necessarily in the same characters. Yeah. Okay, I got you.
Yes. I don't know how. There is four of them. But it's funny because... It's
clearly the girl is Sue Storm. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Metamorpho, he's in love with his girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
So there's that thing already, so he's not... So he's
is
like,
she the girl that's in it?
No.
Okay, it's a different girl.
Because,
okay.
Like, Plastic Man's kind of in love with this girl.
Plastic Man's in love with every girl.
Well, the thing is, it's kind of funny because, like...
Now, wait, I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
Oh, you're reading that book, yes. Right? Plastic Man, New 52, nowhere to be seen.
Uh-uh.
This book, Dark Knight Metal, was the first time he showed up out of nowhere. Did they offer any kind of origin for him, or...?
No, I think he was in the New 52.
I don't recall him anywhere.
But he was... I don't think he was wearing the red and black. I think he was wearing a different costume.
I'd like to know for sure on that, because it seemed like to me they just brought him in like, oh, and here's somebody that's always been here.
Well, no, because like in Metal, he showed up as the Bomb.
Right, he was an egg.
Yeah.
But it was almost like they introduced him that way, and oh, by the way, here's his character, his name is Plastic Man, but he's an egg. I was like, what? We're not going to get any of the backstory on this, how he was a thief? And...
Well, the funny thing is, it's like Mr. Terrific like steals him.
Yeah.
At some point, and he's still the egg in it, even though he... showed up in Metal 6, like, as the Tyrannosaurus and whatever to fight the guys.
Right.
But, like, Mr. Terrific creates some teleportation device or something, and he ends up on this planet. Well, when they're on the planet, they meet the Ghost Girl.
Right.
I think that's even her name, her...
Ghost Girl.
And she, like, the thing is, she doesn't know how long she's been on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And, like... From what she kind of tells them is she's been on this planet for, like, almost a decade. And, like, she's trying to find her parents. Well, the thing is, when they get back to Earth... Like,
so she's alien.
Yeah, she's okay. An alien. And she has the intangibility thing. But, like, when they get back to Earth, they're all kind of bonded.
Right.
So they have to stay together within, like, a mile radius or they'll explode. And that keeps them together, even though Mr. Terrific's kind of a butthole. I mean, like, he's like, Major League, I don't have any time for this crap. I need to figure out blah, 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 and this and that. And
so is it just because he's too aloof to fool with these petty problems, or is he just, or is he actually a butthole?
Oh, he's a butthole.
Oh, okay. It's not like he's like Reed Richards. Reed Richards had his nose so far into what he was doing that he just ignored everybody.
Well, no, he's that way, too. I mean.
You're right.
But he's still...
But, you know, Reed loves Sue. He just didn't pay her enough attention.
Well, Mr. Terrific doesn't care about any of these people.
Okay.
He's just trying to solve the problem so they can split up.
Right.
But, like I said, it's kind of cool because, like I said, Metamorpho's dealing with his girlfriend, whose father is the one who actually got him transformed.
Right.
Who he hates.
Who I hate?
And, like...
Korg.
Like,
didn't pin enough pamphlets.
Plastic Man, like, he's really funny in it. But, like, at the end of, like, the first issue, after coming back from Earth, Mr. Terrific gets this message. And it's a message from an earlier character from DC's history that hasn't been seen in...
Yars.
10, 15 years, literally.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's Tom Strong. The character from the ABC, Alan Moore stuff.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of weird how that's working out because, like, there's been, like, Tom Strong stories that are, like, Image books.
Right.
Or Top Cow books. I'm not real sure which one because I think Alan Moore distanced himself from those books.
Right.
But he's showing up in these DC books. And that's really interesting because I don't know how that works out yet.
Yeah, that publishing rights on that seems messed up. I don't know.
Well, they might have...
Well, did DC buy America's Best Comics at some point?
Well, yeah, I think... Well, I'm not sure. I'm not going to comment. I don't know.
I'm not certain. I don't remember.
But, yeah, like I said, it just depends on who you know, or what you like.
The new Wildstorm acquisition. Anyway, I don't know.
The new Challengers just came out last week. I have not read that yet. I'm about to see what that one's like. But, like, I'm reading... two or three of them right now ongoing, so
excellent. So
Terrifics is really great. sideways really
good. So do you think these books have any staying power?
I kind of think they do.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, I don't know what the readership will be like. Because, like I said, the Immortal Man is the one
that's... I mean, are we going to get 50, 60 issues out of any of these, or are they going to go away?
Maybe the Terrifics. But I wouldn't know about the other ones.
Okay. It depends on...
Because the other ones are kind of more on the fringe.
Right.
Like I said, it just depends on who you like, what you
right.
like.
But, all right, we're interested to see.
Like I said, that was a really good segue, John. Thanks for that.
No problem. I'm glad to help. All right, the last thing we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk about a four-issue story arc, but I'm kind of going to do it as one thing, and I'm not going to give nearly the detailed review that we've done for the other books we talked about. I'm just going to talk about it in generalities. And that story arc is called Super Sons of Tomorrow. And the reason that I really want to talk about this is this book features characters that we've not seen since the New 52 started.
Yeah, the
Titans,
the older Titans,
the Titans that existed in our
the bad guy Titans,
right? And so, people like Connor Kent,
yes,
who was Superboy, he's my Superboy.
Yeah, the grown up Superboy.
Too. Yeah, the grown up Superboy. Cassie Sandsmark,
who was the clone of the
right.
original one because Robin brought him back.
But no, he's the same Superboy that appeared in. At the death of Superman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But he had died, and Superboy brought him back. That's why he was evil.
Oh, he was evil?
Yeah.
When was that?
During that Teen Titans run when Jeff Johns brought him in.
I must have missed that. Well,
that's
I can't,
the whole thing. That's why
I can't read everything.
That's why.
But he wasn't evil at the time that...
when the future Titans showed up, yeah, he was evil. Because they all were kind of evil.
Oh, when they came from the future. Yeah. Right. Well, this is not the future. Those are different ones. Okay. These are our current. They're not evil. All right. So let me break this down for you. Do you remember when during the whole Superman story arc where Jor-El came back as that Mr. Oz character? You remember that?
Yes.
All right. For whatever reason, Mr. Oz abducted... Tim Drake while he was on the team with Batwoman.
Yeah, and he becomes a kind of Punisher character himself.
Right. So he abducts him and he puts him in a prison because for some reason he doesn't want Superman to have access to him for some reason. Like, I don't know why. They never explained what Mr. Oz's motivations were on that. All right. So, and I don't know that we'll ever know because now that Bendis is writing that, I think that nobody cares about that storyline anymore. So they were going to come back to it at some point, and I don't ever look for him to. But anyway, Tim Drake is in this prison that Oz has got him in, and when suddenly somebody else shows up in that prison, and it's Tim Drake from the future. But Tim Drake from the future is crazy.
Yeah.
He is crazy as all get out. Because he's talking about that the world's going to be decimated unless he kills Batwoman. And so, Tim Drake has to basically fight himself in that series, and he does. And at the end of it, evil Tim Drake, he's not evil, he's just crazy, gets sucked back into the future. And he goes, you don't realize what you've done. In stopping me, you've eliminated all your friends. He said, what friends? You know, people like Connor Kent. And he goes, who are you talking about? Because in this current DC universe, Connor Kent doesn't exist.
Yeah, and the guy that was Superboy was an alternate Superman's son.
Right. So, I was like, and I got real hopeful when I was reading that. Cause I was like, oh, Connor Kent, he's my Superboy. He's my Superboy from the death of Superman and all that. Oh, my God. And so, but that was it. It was over and it was never touched on again. I'm like, crap. All right, so suddenly... In this book, Super Sons of Tomorrow, which starts in Superman number 37. Again, I know we're up to like 45 or something. I'm a little behind. And
34 was the last issue.
Oh, whatever.
Plus the specials.
Right. And so in this issue, you know, you've got basically Bruce Wayne sitting at his home when this same Tim Drake from the future comes crashing in and fights Bruce Wayne to a halt. And I mean... Because apparently the Tim Drake in this future that he's come back from is Batman's equivalent in fighting. Now, I know hardcore Batman fans say there is no such thing. But still, he fights him to a standstill and gets the upper hand on him when he shoots him with a gun because this Tim Drake carries guns.
Yeah.
All right, so he drags him down into Batcave and immobilizes him there because he's not dead.
Didn't he change his name?
To what?
He calls himself something different.
Oh, by the end of this, he does. Yeah. But so anyway, so then he goes off to the Arctic, where he runs onto Superman, and somehow or another manages to catch Superman and put him in a red kryptonite force bubble. Which is the dumbest thing ever, because nobody seems to remember. All it does is it like makes Superman powerless. That's not what red kryptonite does. Why doesn't the people at DC have a list of kryptonite colors with a chart explaining what they do? Red kryptonite has unpredictable effects on Superman. You never know what it's going to do to him.
It can make him actually super strong.
It might. There was one issue in the like 70s where Superman was exposed to red kryptonite and he grew a giant like ant head and like with antennas and stuff. It does random weird things to him. Red kryptonite is the kind of thing, and it was the thing that Batman used in the Tower of Babel that's turned Superman.
Standing glass, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's what red kryptonite does. You never know what it's going to do. So he's in this red kryptonite bubble and it just makes him powerless. And I was like, man, that's supposed to be green kryptonite. What's the matter with you guys? Anyway.
That was part of the unpredictability. Ah!
I don't know. Well, there is a random chance, however remote, that the red kryptonite would just steal his powers and nothing else. But it's extremely remote.
Maybe it just made him really weak.
All right, so now we find out later on as we're reading through the arc of why this Tim Drake has come back from the future. Apparently, at some point in the future, this Superboy that we know now, Jonathan Kent, the son of Superman and Lois, goes off and destroys the city accidentally by not having good control of his power. And
he stumbles.
He falls over and the city's ruined, yeah.
Oh my god.
Apparently he has a similar solar flare power that Superman exhibited recently in the pages of certain Superman comics.
You mean comics. New 52 Superman.
New 52. Well, this is apparently that this Superman still has that power, apparently. Because if you recall during that whole Oz storyline, that New 52 Superman and our old pre-crisis Superman were merged. So bits and pieces of both of them are now real.
I don't remember that.
Well, it happened, trust me. And so
I thought New 52 Superman died.
He did. But when the world Mixis Pitalik remade the world, and in doing so altered reality. Altered reality, and so the essence of who the New 52 Superman was joined with the pre-crisis Superman, and now both histories are present at once in this character. Like, both things happen. Like, he is both of them. It's stupid, and I don't like it, but it's there. So this solar flare power that he had, he apparently still has. Jonathan Kent has it too. But Jonathan Kent, because he's not purely Kryptonian, can't do it right. And because he can't do it right, when he does it, things get destroyed. Things get blown up. He has no control over it the way Superman does.
Oh, yeah, because I remember he killed that cat in the first issue or whatever. Because of it.
So the thing is like at some point, Superboy is going to get so mad and so ticked off and so emotional that solar flare power is just going to erupt and he's going to destroy an entire city, millions of people dead. The only way to prevent it is to kill him. Because anytime somebody comes back from the future to prevent a disaster, it involves somebody dying in order to cause that disaster not to come to pass. Like, the only way you could ever prevent the Holocaust would be to kill Hitler. You couldn't find Hitler at an early age and talk him out of it. Or even abduct him and put him with a foster family where he grew up under different circumstances. No. You must take his life. This is the only way to change history for the better.
So that's always been the thing.
That's always true, whether it's Days of Future Past or whatever. Somebody got to die in the past to save the future. All right, so here he comes, and he says, now that the parents are out of the way, he's going to try to take down Superboy. And Superboy, come to find out, is not at home where he's supposed to be. He's with the Titans, where he's eavesdropping on a meeting that Damian is having with the rest of the Titans, because Superboy's not a member of the team. He wants to be, but they won't let him.
Because he's not a
team. Mainly because Damian's a dick and he just won't let him. He keeps...
But he's not a team, man. Not a team.
That's fun. But Damian keeps promising him and he keeps lying to him and he keeps putting him off because he didn't want to fool with him. And, like, Damian's not a very good friend.
Well, of course he's not.
So, the gist of it is, like, they spend this whole time running around Titan's Tower trying to kill Superboy, the other Titans rallying to his cause, and when future Tim Drake reaches out to Raven and says, make them see what I know to be true, then she gives them all a vision of the future. Well, at that point, half the Titans think, well, yeah, it might be best to kill him. I'm like, what? Come on, guys. And then the other half think, no, no, we've got to save him. So you end up with the teams, the Titans divided, half of them working with the new Tim Drake because he gets his costume destroyed, so he has to put on a new costume that he got in the Titan storeroom. He just made it up out of bits and pieces. And when he makes this new costume, well, he gives himself a new name, and he calls himself Savior.
Yes.
That's his new name, his new moniker, right? And so they're still going around trying to kill Superboy, and Damian actually is saving him. Damian is actually the one keeping him away. And they end up, finally, the issues, there's four issues in this. It starts in Superman, then it goes to Teen Titans, and then it goes to Super Sons, then it comes back to Superman. And when it comes back to Superman, then we find ourselves back in the Arctic, because Superboy basically told Damian that that's a safe place. Well, about that time, the future Titans show up, and they've come back for Tim Drake because he's crazy. And so you've got future Connor Kent, who has still got that stupid Buzz haircut, and he doesn't look very good when he's wearing the Superman costume with the Buzz haircut. But you got Cassie Sandsmoke, you got Bart Allen, who is another character we've not seen since this whole New 52 thing started. It doesn't exist anymore as far as we know. So I just miss these characters. This is why I was excited about this. And so they spend all this time. They're back up at the fortress. They go out there and they find Superman outside. They get him out of the red kryptonite bubble. Savior shows up along with the other Titans. And they have this big fight. And of course, at the end of the day, because Superman's joining the fight now, they're victorious. The Titans from the future show up and they pull him back to the future. But not before he goes one more attempt to try and kill Superboy. And in doing so, there's this giant explosion which knocks him into some kind of parallel nexus where he has access to all of the DC multiverses. And not just the 52, all the multiverses for all time. There are characters on this wall.
Hyper time?
That's hyper time. This is a concept that existed in the Superboy comics in the 90s that they got rid of because apparently Dan Didio hated it. And now it's back because, I mean, you see things behind him from Crisis on Infinite Earths.
There are a bunch of, like, the same images over and over again.
Well, some of them, but a bunch of them are, like I said, there's characters on here from post-Crisis. There's characters on here from New. There's Dark Knight's Metal. There's Parallax, Hal Jordan. There's all this stuff on here. There's from Final Crisis where Superman's holding Batman's dead body. There's the All-Star Batman and Robin from Jim Lee. That's on there. So this stuff that's just... he's got access to all of this now. And so the question is where will he show up and where will he go? And of course, it's not going to be followed up here in these pages. But he'll show up again at some point in some future book. But at some point, I figure Savior will be back trying to kill somebody else because it's what he does. It's weird how Tim Drake in the future has gone crazy. And now is a time-traveling crazy man always out to kill somebody.
Well, future Tim Drake from Future Titans is crazy, too.
Well, is our current Tim Drake destined to be crazy? Or
it looks that way, the way they're doing it in Detective, because I think they've been making him a villain or something like that since he came back from the Oz thing.
So, I don't know. But they're introducing... at least DC is playing around... and this is what I like. Although the story is not particularly powerful, they are playing around with some concepts that I like. They're playing around with hypertime. In fact, the word hypertime was thrown around in this issue. They're playing with characters that we've not seen since Flashpoint. These are characters we've not seen since Flashpoint. You know, and so...
well, Wally just met Iris and Flash.
Right.
But not her nephew, Wally, who came back from...
Right. The old Caucasian continuity. Wally that came back from pre-crisis.
And they just met each other for the first time.
Didn't I read somewhere that
Iris got her memory back? Who he was.
Yeah.
She's like, oh my God, I remember you, blah, blah, blah.
So I don't get it.
Which I think is funny, because remember back like when New 52 was going on, mm-hmm. and they were like, there's no way none of this could be rewritten. And someone came up to him and just like, I guess it was Geoff Johns going, yeah, I could
fix all that right now.
And all it was Wally coming back.
Yeah.
And boom.
But now I do have a small problem with DC Comics.
Oh, in Convergence, because Superman and Lois were
right
always on Earth since that happened.
Right.
Which I find that funny, too.
Right. So, I do have a small problem with the DC Universe right now, and that small problem is this.
Too many good books.
No, is y'all are really dragging your feet. Since Wally showed up, and since the whole button thing, with Button in the Cave, Watchmen stuff.
Yeah, that's Doomsday Clock, which I haven't read any of those issues.
But it's all related somehow or another. This idea that Dr. Rebirth, which had this idea that Dr. Manhattan had somehow screwed with the DC Universe, which is why we had the New 52 in the first place, right?
Yeah.
They're just lollygagging. They're not bringing us to any kind of resolution at any type of speed on this. They just keep playing with it. And so for the most part, you've still got New 52 continuity. For the most part, they've abandoned the costumes. But it's still, for the most part, the same continuity. And they're just ever so slightly, once in a while, allowing little post-crisis elements to creep in.
Post-final crisis.
Right.
Post-flashpoint. Pre-flashpoint.
Which is post-crisis, that whole run. From 86 to whenever, Flashpoint.
I would just say pre-flashpoint.
Okay, whatever.
Depending on our audience, they may not know.
Then we may be too old. I got you.
I'm old.
But, you know, the biggest change has been, outside of Wally showing up, has been the pre-crisis Superman showing up and that whole thing. And the old Superman dying. And then they got joined, and that was stupid. And Mixoplick did that. But still, that's it. For the most part, that's all that's changed. And the idea that DC Rebirth was going to tell the story of how the New 52 happened and how that got messed up. And that's been going on, 2 years now? And they're not really making any headway at this. So, I kind of wish they'd, you know, speed it up. I'm really interested to find out what happens. And I'm like, you know what? You need to either, DC, you need to either embrace the New 52 continuity and keep it, or you need to chuck it and go with pre-crisis, post-crisis, or pre-flashpoint continuity, or merge them into something in between. But don't just give us little flibs and details and every once in a while and allude to things once in a while and never really do anything substantive. That's driving me crazy.
I just like remember like during like the Green Lanterns, they knew about 52.
Uh-huh.
So I just think it's weird. It's just like they're still out there somewhere.
Since you like chicks, right? You just look at yourself naked in the mirror all the time?
So that's it. Do you have anything else to talk about tonight, Trevor? All right. We've run longer than we were supposed to on this episode anyway. So it's going to be almost another 2-hour episode just talking about comics. Hour and a half, a little more. So that's it. We want you guys to come and check us out online when you can. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/John Loveless for me, XOnslaught for Charlie. We're on the Facebook. You can search for us there, John Loveless and Charlie Huffman. There's also a Facebook page for the show, Alternate Reality. You can follow that and like it and follow it, see it first in your timeline if you want to, and you'll be updated when new shows come out. Subscribe to the show on your podcatcher or whatever iTunes, iPhone podcasting service you use, whether you use Stitcher or whatever. You can get our RSS feed from the Podomatic page. I think the Podomatic address is podomatic.com/arnetcast, I think. I need to get me some kind of cheat sheets that's got all this stuff on it. But for the most part, if you search for Alternate Reality Podcasts, you should be able to find it. Whether you're searching on Facebook, Twitter, or just on the Google, you should be able to find the Alternate Reality Podcast. So check us out there. Subscribe to the show where you'll never miss an episode. And we look forward to talking to you on the internet in a few more days. In the meantime, my name is John.
I'm Charlie.
And we're out. You guys have a good night. Until next week, arrivederci.
Now he's getting a tattoo, yeah, he's getting ink done.